stop. Max and Stacy's threesome.
It's threesome podcast number 89, Lex and Stacy. What is happening?
Hey, how are you?
Hey, I don't know. I don't know why I started like that, but that's fine.
It was perky. It was upbeat.
Certainly wasn't.
It
like
was
the,
you.
Certainly wasn't like the first 88 of them, was it?
No. Right. I think you just shot your proverbial load.
Yes, I think.
With the perky.
I think that's all gone now. I don't think I have any more introduction loads left. That was pretty much the last one.
From now on, it's just going to be dust and.
Yeah, that's right. Just. It's like, hey. What's up?
Hey,
you. What's up?
Hey, Lex.
What's up, Stacy?
Not too much.
Today on the Threesome Podcast, we're going to talk about, well, what it used to be like to be able to do a threesome.
Yes. That energy level, the motivation.
That's right. The electricity.
Yes.
Yeah.
The chemistry. The animalistic fucking.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. The shameless just thrusting of hell's pelvis into the depths of
the devil's hammer.
That's right. The devil's hole. The gash of hell.
The doomsday chasm.
That's right.
Which was my nickname in high school, too, by the way.
Oh, how fun.
Mm-hmm.
I had so many.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I did.
Lex, the big Kotex.
No, that never made it to high school. That was more of a 12 or 13-year-old neighborhood thing.
Oh, thank God.
Yeah. Because that's
everyone signed that in your yearbook.
maybe even before that, because she was, I think she was 15 or 16-ish, which would have made me like 9 or 10. So
I am glad your sister right now is somewhere thinking, I'm so happy that he's told everyone when I started my period.
Yeah, well, that's what you get when you put a tampon on your brother's leg as a Band-Aid.
Technically, I'm assuming it was a pad, not a tampon.
Believe me, she paid dearly for all of her sins and continues to do so. She is pretty responsible for creating my evil mind. I give her a lot of credit for showing me the ropes on just how to fuck with people beyond any need.
When it becomes recreational.
Yeah, this is a girl that used to just run your toothbrush under the water to make you think it got used.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing grosser.
Yeah.
That except maybe when the toilet seat is warm because you know someone just was sitting on it. Oh.
Yeah.
Gross.
Yeah, or, threw an old fan into the bathtub and made it look like it was plugged in.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I've never gotten to meet her.
She put me down a laundry chute, three stories into a pile of clothes. That was nice, but didn't realize that when people build houses, they don't necessarily take the nails and pound them into the wood in the laundry chute.
I was going to say, that's catching on all of your bits and parts.
So while I got lucky to have just a minor scratch from one, my mother almost grounded her for 2 years for that. A, for doing it head first, and B, for the fact that once you put a flashlight down there and saw the 60 or 70 nails, it was a miracle I wasn't just skewered.
You know, kids survive that stuff, though.
Yeah.
You know, we as grown-ups go, my God, the nails. But out of all the kids that have gone down laundry chutes, I'm going to guess like only two have lost an eye.
Yeah.
And there's been so many more that's actually made that trip.
But as I got more savvy, you know, and she didn't leave the house till 19, you know, so there were a constant stream of boys coming over to the house that were, you know, trying to either date her or were friends of hers or, you know, just trying to get down her pants. Who knows? You know, I don't know what each one of their relationships were, but I just knew there were three or four dudes she kind of rotated. And and I was very prolific at getting their names wrong and saying things on purpose like, you know, this is the first time I've seen you wear shoes over here. And the guy's like, I always wear shoes over here. And I went, oh, sorry.
Wrong guy.
Oops. Yeah. And she'd look over at me like, you little piece of fucking shit. And I'd just kind of smile at her like, there's more where that came from. In the end, when she left for college, there was a mutual respect that she, A, knew that I was a worthy adversary, and B, was kind of proud of herself that she made me that way.
Well, good.
You know, she even over the years, when I would tell her somebody at work or at school or whatever was getting to me, she would, you know, grab me by the lapels, Joan Collins style, and go, you know what to do. I've seen you do it. Now put your mind to work. It's like, okay. And then being the nice big sister, she's like, but if you can't figure it out, call me. We'll find a way to fuck with them.
Yes.
She is nobody to play with. She is Terry James worthy.
Really?
Really. She's that good. She is that good.
Is she that evil?
She can be. After all, she is a girl. So,
but bum.
Hey, it's the physical equalizer. You guys will go the extra mile. Most guys won't. I mean, you know. Didn't you see that Sarah Michelle Gellar movie?
Which one?
The one where they're all just fucking each other over through the whole, I forget what it's called. It was a bad movie.
Was it Cruel Intentions?
Yes. Yes, yes, yes.
Okay. Like the high school. Yeah. Yet they're all dressed like adults and doing adult things, but they're like, you know, allegedly 15 or whatever.
Exactly. But they're all like drinking and driving and, you know, looking like they're going to corporate jobs and stuff like that. But they're
exactly. At one point she comes out, she's got like that long, like night, you know, evening gown on. And it's like, okay, who wears that, you know, at that age, except for prom? So two nights in your high school life. Come on.
Yeah. I mean, there hadn't been a movie like that since 16 Candles or Pretty in Pink. Whatever one James Spader was in.
Blaine. Was he Blaine? Was that his name?
I think it was Blaine, yeah. And he was amazing.
And, oh, he had douche down perfect.
As he always is.
Yes.
I always thought it was funny in the movie Bad Influence that Rob Lowe was the Bad Influence guy. And James Spader was the good guy. You know, it was like... It's like, who cast this?
I admit, I did not appreciate James Spader until I was much, much older. And I think it was when he lost his hair. And I went, okay, now you're an actor. Now you're not a douchebag anymore.
What was it I saw him in when he was younger that I thought he was... I went, okay, he's got some chops. He's all right. I can't remember what it was. It may have been Bad.
Was it Stargate?
It may have been... No. It may have been Bad Influence, actually, where I went, this guy's pretty good. But Blacklist? Oh, God. He's awesome.
I love that.
Yeah.
There was that scene in season 2, because season 3 is on right now, so I've not seen any of that. So it was last season where the family was playing Russian roulette with a gun.
Yeah.
And James Spader takes the gun and, like, pulls the trigger and shoots Dad right in the heart.
Yeah.
And he laughs and goes, oh, my God, what are the odds? Yeah. And turns around and walks away.
Yeah, he's just a sociopath, psychopath.
You got to respect him.
Uh-huh. He's like, oh, I'm so sorry.
He didn't even apologize. He just goes, oh, my God, what are the odds? Yeah. And walks away.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I shot your dad in the heart.
Just awesomeness. So, I mean, we just had all kinds of... we used to have this cousin. We still have him, but we just don't hang out. But he was extremely high intellect. I mean, he had like a 170 IQ, just off the fucking scale smart. You know, I mean, you'd go to the house, you know, for 2 weeks in the summer, you know, and his brother was just a typical normal, you know, ended up growing up and being a blue collar type dude. And he had, like, equations written on the walls and shit like that. I mean, this kid was, you know.
So he got laid a lot.
But no. He was a fucking hot-headed, dangerous, evil, just asshole-y piece of shit.
So he probably did actually get laid a lot.
And, no. He ended up knocking somebody up, you know. So it's
see?
Like, but he... He used to, I used to, my radar was constantly off around him. I would never was easy. I was always, you know, just very guard up when he was around. But for some reason, my sister could just get under his skin like nobody else. And they decide one night. I guess about the time they were 15 or 16, and I was, you know, Dale and I were like, you know, 10-ish, somewhere around there. And my uncle and my dad decided they were going to take us to Bridgeville and get some ice cream and, you know, just take us out somewhere. Right?
Family road trip.
So the two grown-ups are in the front seat, and there's four of us in the back. And... Brett, the genius kid, is sitting on the end, and they go to start the car, and you hear this, ah, 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 and I look over, and my sister's smiling at me, and I see that his arms are up in the electric window. You know, like right on the wrist, you know, right where the veins are on the wrist and his arms. And my dad is going, Brett, will you shut the fuck up? And all this. And my sister's going, yeah, Brett, you know, it's like we're going to have ice cream and you're ruining everything. And he's like, my arms are out the window. My dad's like, God damn it. You know, and he turns around and looks and he sees his arm sticking in the window and sees my sister laughing. and just calmly rolls down the window and says nothing to my sister. Doesn't say a word to her. And she's just got this shit-eating grin on her face. And she used to do shit to this guy all the time. I mean, he's a Rhodes Scholar. You know, he's gone to Oxford. He's still a professor at some major university somewhere. And she used to just own him in the fuck with you department. It was so funny. You know, and he used to say shit to her like, you know, what's your IQ? Like in the 110s, 120s? And she used to go, I don't know. I just know people like me. You know, stuff like that.
So she is very much your sister.
Yeah, I mean, she just was under his skin constantly. And, yeah, he ended up knocking up somebody, and it was like all dramatic and everything. And in the last 20 years or so, you know, he's kind of become a really nice guy and reached out to family. And, you know, I guess he's on some meds now and, you know, is a better person. But, you know, he calls me and wants to get together, like, when he comes to town, and I'm always busy.
And right now he's supporting you and listening to this podcast, and he's like, that son of a bitch.
I doubt it.
And but you never know.
And if he is, I didn't get to finish telling you that I told him I was busy on purpose. Because he was a dick to me when I was a kid. So,
but maybe he has the opportunity to enrich you and be a really good friend now that you guys are old.
Or maybe it's my time to turn the tables and be an asshole to him.
You know, you are getting to that age where you really need to bank those karma points.
It's so petty. But I,
it is.
But, you know, it's at least I'm being real about it. And I would tell my therapist the same thing. Yes, I'm a complete asshole. I know.
And it pleases me.
I agree with you. No, I'm not going to fix it. This is fixing it.
I don't
want
to stop.
Yeah.
I haven't hit rock bottom yet.
If I fixed it like you wanted me to fix it, I'd be fucking miserable. No. Isn't the idea here for me to be happier? Well, this makes me so fucking happy.
Yay.
He stepped on one of my little HO race cars once, my little electric race cars I was into. And he stepped in one, and he goes, there. He goes, it won't beat me next time. No, there's not going to be a next time. I'm never hanging out with you ever again.
Was he like Lex Luthor or something?
Oh, he was just an asshole. My dad threw him out of the house for that. He's like, what'd you do? He goes, get the fuck out of my house. My dad hated him. My dad fucking hated him. And his parents were so cool, you know. I mean, they really were. His dad's the guy I told you about that was on the verge of Alzheimer's and drove us in the car for like miles before I figured it out.
Remember,
did I tell you that story?
I don't know if you did.
Yeah, we went to see my grandmother, his mother, who was in her upper 90s, but still very astute, very, you know, animated and all that. But she decided she wanted some fast food from somewhere in Pittsburgh that, you know, was a couple of exits down. And he goes, Lex and I will go get you something. I'm like, yeah, this is cool. You know, I'll spend some time with Uncle Lou. I haven't seen him in a while. So we're driving. And we're driving, and we're driving. And I went, hey, Uncle Lou, where are we going? He goes, I don't know. And I went, oh, yeah? I said, so what's going on these days? And he goes, well, he goes, they've put me in this place to live, you know, because my memory is not so good. You know, anymore. And he goes, so And I'm like, oh. And he's driving the car.
Yes.
And I said, pull off this next exit. And he goes, what for? And I went, just because. Yeah.
Humoring him
right back. Just because. So I got the keys away from him and went back to the place she wanted us to go to.
Wrestled him to the ground and went got there. The keys.
And But I'll never, it was so comedically funny. It's like, I go, Lou, where are we going? I don't know. It's like, wow, how freeing.
Yes.
Yeah. I was actually jealous for a second. Yeah, but he was cool, but we drove 40 miles for some fried chicken. You know, it was just ridiculous. They were like, where have you been? It's like Uncle Lou was driving and everybody's like, what? It's like, yeah, hey, little heads up, since I live in another part of the fucking country.
There comes a time and place when they take the car away. An unpleasant thing
and
for
that,
kids.
And that was it. That was the day. I went, yeah, we almost went to Aliquippa for, you know, we were about 19 exits past the chicken place. Thanks for the heads up.
And see, it's tough because, I mean, there's that point. I mean, obviously when you are full-blown deep in Alzheimer's, you have no idea about anything. But, you know, before you get there, there's your moments of lucidity and moments when you have no idea what's going on. And that's, I think, when it's like the worst
Because he's like talking to me about my career and he knows what's going on and what I'm doing and all that stuff. And, you know, he's telling me how proud he is of me and all this stuff. So I'm thinking he's okay, you know, and then there's these pockets of like, what?
He has no idea who
you
are.
Yeah. Well, that was the thing, you know, he's like, you know, he asked me about the radio thing a second time in the same way. And I was I started putting it together because my grandmother had Alzheimer's. So, you know, I had already been through that boogie once, you know, right where I'd have to go in and completely introduce myself all over again and, you know, kind of fill her in. And then for a while, she would catch on and understand. And then after a while, she just looked at you blankly. You know, I had no idea. And, you know, it's just terrible. So, you know, somebody who just adored you and loved you as a kid and, you know, wanted to know everything, now looked at you like, who are you, and knows nothing. It's so sad.
See, when I was a kid, my grandpa had Alzheimer's, and one of my last memories of him when he was still able to get around, my dad and him and I was a kid, because he died when I was in sixth grade, so yeah. I was younger than that, were out fishing in his little boat in this pond, and we're out there, and my grandpa was like this great fisherman. That's what he did, you know, he fished. And I remember, because I was young, I didn't know what Alzheimer's was. I just knew that Grandpa was a little weird sometimes, you know. And I never forgot, like, him. I realized something was wrong because I could tell my dad was starting to get more and more tense. And Grandpa had no idea how to fish. And he was getting the hook caught, like he got the line caught and the motor and just all of this stuff kept happening. And my dad was just getting...
He died shortly after, didn't he?
No. No, he lived for many years after that.
Oh, wow. Because usually when it gets to the point where they can't do something that they've instinctively done most of their lives, that's when they have like weeks left. You know, that's like the last thing to go is all the instinctive stuff.
I have an aunt right now who has been in a home for 7 years, and she no longer can walk. She hasn't been able to walk for a while, so she just sits there and smiles. You know, her kids visit her and stuff. Mm-hmm. She has no idea. She can speak occasionally, and it's usually stuff like just, wow. You know, she can say, wow.
You know, if I was ever in some sort of political power, would want to invoke some sort of mercy law that people in their lucidity give permission to just, you know, help you go when it gets, you know, like that.
Yes, I think it's a person's choice, you know.
Yeah, which is why they would have to make it while they're lucid, you know.
Right.
You know, it's like you'd have to say when you're 50 years old, you know, like 50's the cutoff point or whatever, where you have to say, you know, when it gets down the road and I start going into this condition, I, you know, give power of authority, you know, a chance for you to have a talk with your kids or your close friends and say, you know, I love you the most. I need you to do this for me. You know, I don't want to live like this. Don't ever pretend that I do. And, you know, I want off the planet if I become this.
Right.
You know, you should be able to do that.
Yes.
And you know why? You know what my reasoning for it is? You know, they say it's going against God, but it's not, because, you know, he gave us the power to think for ourselves. It's a decision being made by a completely lucid person. And like you mentioned in a prior podcast, I don't think we were ever supposed to live this long.
Yeah.
You know, so now that we are, and now the technology makes it so you can outlive your body, or your body can outlive your mind, you should be able to put in some sort of, you know, because if it starts becoming a financial and emotional grind on younger people living their lives, which it didn't used to be in the 1800s. Or not, you know, or
right. That's why you had 10 kids to help with the farm.
Exactly. Because
at least 3 of them were going to die before they made it to toddlerhood.
Yeah, and dad in a healthy life died in his early 60s, or, you know, they're, you know,
you're really lucky, late 40s, with all of that butter and bacon that he had for breakfast every day.
Exactly. You know, and beef and everything else. You know, it's. There's got to be the ability for somebody to do that, because, you know, I've told Lisa numerous times, if I ever have a stroke and become a vegetable, if you don't take this pillow and smother the fucking shit out of me, I will come back and haunt you for ever and a day when I finally do go.
And, you know, it sucks because the laws and such that are in place put... I would certainly want my family to pull the plug in a legal sense and everything. If I'm declared brain dead, don't sit there and think that I'm going to come back. If they say I'm a veggie, I'm a veggie.
Yeah,
you know?
don't say I'm in there.
Because look, my eyes follow light. I must be okay. You know, look at me. But I also would not want to put such a guilt trip on a loved one that they would feel the need to, quote unquote, smother me with a pillow to put me out of my misery, and then they get busted and spend the rest of their life in prison because they were acting out my final wish. You know, I don't want that either. It's just tough. And I think that the laws really need to loosen up and look at a long-term dignity and wellness of life.
Yeah, I'd like her to be able to take a piece of paper with my signature and a notary on it that says, you know, when it gets to this point, this is what I want. And it just happens.
Right.
You know, it's... You know, once again, much like, you know, birth control and abortion, there's people that say that's interfering with, you know, godly acts, but I disagree.
If God made you brain dead, it means that he wants you home. So why not speed up that process for him so he can get you in his arms and give you a little God hug?
That's right.
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Because that's what I'd want.
A God hug?
I want a God hug as opposed to sitting in a bed, sore-ridden bed, you know, maybe having a lucid mind and nothing else that works. You know?
See, my grandma had a stroke, and she actually had a DNR. but they were not aware of it, and so they resuscitated her. And then she lived at least 8 years in a near vegetative state, just laying in a bed with a tube, a feeding tube. She would kind of smile sometimes, like they would bring therapy kittens in and stuff, and she would react a little bit to them. But other than that, she just kind of laid there.
Great. This is the last pussy I'm going to see. Therapy kittens.
Grandma. Not grandpa.
I was being selfish and thinking of me in that position.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think at that point, therapy pussy would be good. Would be nice little kitten.
Yeah, I mean, great. 8 fucking years, and every once in a while a cat comes in and puts a smile on your face. Whoop-de-doo.
A big, goofy smile.
Yeah. How fucking sad. So, let's move on to other things. I had something so fucking cool happen on this show this morning. There's a guy that's a Lex and Terry listener who's a Marine. Did a couple tours. He showed up here today, lives in town, and has been trying to muster up the guts to come over here for like a year and a half, and finally did today. His name is Zach Moore, and he told this story about his master sergeant, who was a devout Lex and Terry fan because he was at Camp Lejeune and made it mandatory for his soldiers to make sure he had all the Lex and Terry audio he could get his hands on, you know, which meant them sending home for it and so on and so forth, because this was before the upload download days. This was, you know, more like
CDs. This is a long time ago.
CDs and right. stuff like that. And so he used to set up these communication posts and bases. That was his job. And he said they could be anything from a little room to, you know, something the size of a parking lot. He says, but we had to set up the communication between all the buildings. And he said, we also have, our job was to make sure that in the middle of the night that Lex and Terry played over the loudspeakers into the mountains, you know, because, you know, it's just what he wanted. You know, he wanted to just irritate the, you know, the masses. Well, one night they fell under attack. And a couple of the guys got into the building that he was in and his master sergeant was in. His master sergeant, of course, was a SEAL, so he disposed of his guy instantaneously and then came over and pulled him off the guy that he was tangling with and stomped him to death with his boots, saying things to him like, don't you ever fucking interrupt my Lex and Terry show ever again while he's kicking this guy's head in.
See, he who cares the least wins.
Mm-hmm. And I'm like, okay, this is the coolest fucking story ever. And then he said 3 months later, his master sergeant, who was his idol, his, you know, just everything to him, died in an IED explosion. He said, and unfortunately, I was on cleanup detail, and I get there, and it's him.
Aw.
He said, and he goes, I took his boots, and I wore his boots for the rest of my days in the military. And he pulls the boots out of the bag, and it's got his dog tags on them. And he says, I've been wanting to give you these since I came home. He goes, Lex and Terry got us through so much over there. And he goes, it was like our life's blood. And he goes, I wanted you to have these. He goes, and I've had them way too long. He goes, it's almost kind of a burden, you know, but I know he would have wanted you to have them. So he gave us his boots.
Aww.
So,
did you cry? Come on. You welled up, at least.
Oh, God. I was a mess.
Good.
Yeah.
Not good, but you know what I mean. Good.
You know? For a lot of reasons. You know, because I know we entertain people. But to think that we were loved enough by these guys, you know, who obviously heard us in training at Camp Lejeune, you know, on 99.5 The X, and, you know, when, and then made sure that they got audio of us after they went on their tours, was really touching to me. And the fact that we were being blasted into the mountains at night on very loud Marshall stacks, you know, like Tokyo fucking Rose in World War II or Hanoi Jane was just badass to me. You know, like we were being sent out there like propaganda to scare them. Which, if Drunk Bitch Friday was on there, I'm sure it did. It was just amazing. It makes you feel good about coming to work. Yeah, right. that you're actually, you know, affecting somebody's day like that. You know, the fact that some guy watched another guy stomp a bad guy's head in because he messed up the show for the day. By the way, it's so Full Metal Jacket at school.
I can say that as a former employee of yours, I personally am really glad you didn't employ those tactics when we fucked up the show.
Yeah.
Thank you, Lex.
I thought about it at times.
For being a kind and benevolent boss.
Yes. Well, like I always told you, Stacy, I run a benevolent dictatorship here at Lex and Terry. You know, as long as you do what I say, I'll smile and pat you on the back and love you. You know, but other than that, you know, it's just got to be done.
And we would love you back.
Fortunately, I would say 99% of the employees we've had have not put me into a position to escalate my anger.
You've been shitty with me, but you've never been angry with me.
No. I get, you know, this is an argument Terry and I have all the time. He says I'm very abrupt with people. And I said...
Has he met himself?
And I said, yeah. I said, but when it's over, it's over.
Ah, yes. As opposed to Mr. Grudge.
I said, you on the other hand.
He has a big fat notebook somewhere of every thing that he thinks has ever been done to him.
You know, I think he used to. He used to keep files on people. I don't know if he still does. He goes,
that's a sickness.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know. I mean, it's just, you know,
no, that's a sickness.
There were you know, there were times I'm glad he had it, to be honest with you. You know, but you know, one day he goes, I even have one on you, and I'm like, I don't give a fuck.
Wow, could he be any creepier?
Yeah.
That's okay. I've got one on your wife.
And he's like,
but not on you.
He's like, surely there's things about me you've written down. I'm like, I don't need to write them down.
I remember all.
Yeah. Who needs to write?
Steel trap. I can't remember anything else, but I remember everything you've done, Terry.
Yeah, it's just the difference in us. You know, he's a writer downer. I'm not. You know, I mean, that's why the show works. You know, it is. You know, he cares too much. I care too little. I care too much. He cares too little. It's just why it's always worked. You know, and You know, there's aspects of the show operation-wise he wants no part of. There's aspects of the show operation-wise I want no part of. You know, and it just works. But, you know, it's, you know, people always ask, you know, do you guys hang out all the time? It's like, no.
Fuck no.
Even when it got to the point, you know, where we understood we had differences and we became closer friends and stuff like that, then we realized we couldn't talk because then it ruined the show. You know, it's like the spontaneity of the show went away because it was all being used on the telephone. So we just stopped talking on the phone about and just emailed ideas and stuff like that, you know, to preserve.
Whereas you and I keep forgetting and we'll have like our hour long conversation about something pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And then have nothing. The next podcast, we're like, eh.
Yeah. So we have to wrap this one up because
we too.
We have another one to do. So let's go ahead and do that. That's what we do. We do two at a time on here, folks. You know, we are very good with our time. Stacy and I.
Yes.
Stacy and I make sure that when we do get together, we get stuff done. So we have another one to do. That will be number 90 coming up. How about that?
I know. Pretty cool.
How BA badass is that, huh?
I know.
All right. So, great podcast, Stacy. Enjoyed it very much.
Are we going to have a celebration for our 100th? Like bands and stuff?
Whatever you want to do. Start thinking it over.
Okay.
Whatever makes you feel good, I'm in.
We'll take requests, too.
Yeah. Yeah, whatever. Maybe we'll do it live on Periscope or something. I don't know. But we'll see. But
that would require me showering, wouldn't it?
It would. And getting a Periscope account.
I have one.
Oh, yeah?
It would require having internet that takes both the recording of this and Periscope going at the same
Jesus.
Time.
Man, you might have to buy a new hamster.
God damn it.
All right, Stacy, we'll see you next time. You all have a good day. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Let's see.
All right, that was 89. What did we talk about? Alzheimer's. Lex's sister and her
military
period.
Story.
Military story. Lex cried. Okay.
And Lex and Terry differences.
Terry is a douchebag.
No, don't put that.
Damn it. Does he get mad when we talk about him?
No. I don't even think he listens.
I bet you he does once in a while at the very least. Make sure no one's doing better than him. Speaking of which, did you see? I think it was last week, maybe the week before.
What?
I posted, it was that uninspirational Instagram account that I love so much. It was a beautiful picture of like a wheat field, and it says, a good place to put inspirational quotes is up your ass.
Ah, love it.
I posted that on our Facebook page. And then thought later, I was like, oh, Terry's going to, if he saw that, I hope he doesn't think that that was directed at him, because it really wasn't. I just hate inspirational quotes, period.
Yeah, I do too. That the Marianne Williamsons of the world and the Deepak Chopras and, you know, it's like, go fuck yourself. You know, I know you sit at home and masturbate and jack off and eat TV dinners and, you know, shut the fuck up.
I couldn't imagine cooking real meals for myself every day.
I there's just some days I don't have the energy, you know, to make myself anything more than a peanut butter sandwich or something.
Yeah.
You know, I just the thought of even getting on my feet after being on them is indigestible to me. So I take the least path of resistance, which usually has the most amount of calories.
Yes, unfortunately. I
mean, with Eggos, 3 for $5, come on.
Hey, ramen.
Yeah.
The worst food ever created.
My hospital month, when I had like no money after my hospital bill, I went to the store with $50, and my goal was no health goal, no nothing. It was literally how much mass quantity of intakeable food can I get for $50? Yep.
Absolutely.
And it was basically ramen, Eggos, and bread and peanut butter.
Depending on the market and stuff, eggs and honestly like a 10-pound sack of taters.
Yeah. Yeah. I got some sweet potatoes. I did do that. And we ate like kings.
And it was amazing. You're like, God damn it, ramen. Why can't you be just a little more nutritional?
I know.
Please. I love you, ramen.
Yeah, I lost 17 pounds in the hospital. Thanks to that last 2 weeks, I put them right back on.
Woohoo.
Those damn Eggos. They are horrible for you.
It's like a Hot Pocket.
It is.
Which are also delicious.
Uh-huh.
If you want just good white trash food.
And you know what else is amazing white trash food? Are those White Castles.
Yes. Absolutely.
All right, so here we go. Podcast number 90. In 3, 2, 1.